Piero Mito, and you're listening to the Faith on the Field show.
Welcome to Faith on the Field show on 97.5 The Fanatic Philadelphia. I am Rob Motti with my beautiful wife, Remy. And if you weren't paying attention to our social media, what are you doing? But no, we got big news. We just started announcing this weekend. And thanks to an awesome new partnership with International Justice Mission, we are expanding. We are going to be starting next weekend, the first week of May. We're going to be on radio stations across the country in LA, Las Vegas, Orlando, Charlotte, and Atlanta, as you said. I love how you said that. You were like Atlanta, not
it's hot,
Atlanta.
Yeah,
you were like
Hotlanta. Hotlanta.
Hotlanta. So that's really cool. We're really excited
Atlanta.
About our partnership with IJM, International Justice Mission, and helping them do incredible work fighting human trafficking and fighting to end slavery.
Mm-mm-mm.
And you and I, this was something that really was on your heart
for a long time,
5, 6, 7 years
ago.
I'd
say about,
like that, right?
Yeah. And it is so disturbing and it's so sad and infuriates me. You know, I heard it once before, if something infuriates you, that means God is really putting it in your heart to do something about it. And for a long time, this has been on my heart. And I'm like, I don't know what to do about it, you know. And we tried several things to do about it, but I guess you can't do much by yourself. You know, you have to connect with the right people to do more, you know, and to do something as great as that.
God's timing and, is better than our timing. He knew. It was on your heart.
It was. Oh, my God. There's not one day that goes by without me saying or praying about this and saying, like, I want to do something about it. I don't know what to do about it, but I'm just going to keep praying and keep pushing and keep believing that a door will open for us to do something about this, because I'm 100% believe that this needs to be completely just
eradicated.
Yeah.
This is horrible.
We need to do something about it, and we need to do it now, because this is infuriating that this is happening and it's still happening. Like, why are we not stopping this?
Oh, my goodness. To think
you
about
know?
Young kids, little kids.
My gosh. It's infuriating.
It really is. It's heartbreaking. You know, we have children. We think about, I can't even, I can't. Like, I'm going to go.
No.
I don't even, it's horrible. And we all really need to just rally together. And organizations like International Justice Mission, incredible, tremendous work they do. And we're excited about our partnership with them, because through that we can, there are so many athletes that are involved that we can talk to and really expand the reach and let more people know the tremendous work that they do. And so we can really help fight it and just help fight against it and put an end to it. And they help survivors. They do tremendous work. And we're excited to tell you more about what they do in the coming weeks. Our guest this week is Benjamin Watson, who played 16 seasons in the NFL, a very accomplished, very successful tight end. He played for the Patriots, won a Super Bowl there, played for the Saints, played for Cleveland, Baltimore, went back to New England, went back to New Orleans. He had two stints there, and it's a really fascinating conversation. It's a very wide-ranging interview. Stay tuned for that to hear from Benjamin. He played with Tom Brady and Drew Brees. Nobody threw more touchdown passes than Tom Brady, who's number one, and Drew Brees number two. So he caught a bunch of touchdown passes from the two most prolific touchdown throwers in a league. But when I ask him about those guys, it's really cool to hear what he says about them, how accessible they are and how they strive for excellence, and how he had a charity event early in his career and Drew Brees showed up. He had no idea that he didn't think Drew would show up, and how hit both of those guys are so accessible, down to earth, and tremendous star athletes. Obviously, Tom's the GOAT and Drew's right up there in the top 10, top 15. So it's really cool to hear that and so much more. Benjamin is relaunching a book that he wrote called Under Our Skin. It's a New York Times bestseller, so he's relaunching that now. He's really one of those guys who is a very respected speaker. He's very eloquent, and he's very thoughtful on a variety of topics. And you don't see him just on the ESPNs. You see him on CNN and Fox News. Like, he's all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it's a great conversation. But the one thing that I really want to touch on for most of this episode is this part when I ask Benjamin, what are you most proud of? He won a Super Bowl. He had more than 500 career catches. Mm-hmm. He played 16 seasons in the NFL. And what when you look back, now that he's been retired for 1 year, he's been, by the way, he has 7 kids.
Oh, wow.
After 5, his 6th and 7th were twins. So they had 5 singles and then multiples. Twins.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Nice. I like it.
There's a lot of parenting going on in,
God
Watson,
bless them, yeah.
in the Watson household. Mm. But when I asked him what was your most proudest accomplishment, it really struck me what he said. He didn't pick anything football. He said there was 1 year where there's 2 things, and 1 year he was voted the team captain. It was the only time he was a team captain in his career with New Orleans, and he was really proud about that. But he said that year, he and Luke McCown, who's a quarterback on the team, he was a backup, maybe third string at the time, said he had played for 14, 13 years at the time. And he said that year they baptized a couple of the teammates in the rehab pool in New Orleans. He said 2 guys, they wanted to be baptized on New Year's Day, January 1st. And he said, we go in there, and we go to the rehab room, the rehab pool. We talk to the trainers. They say, yeah, you could do it. And we just go in there. He said the team gathered around. We sang some hymns, and we have the guys in the chapel. He said, that'll be a memory that will never leave me, because we always talk about football being family. Mm. It's family, but it's also a spiritual family. These are guys that you do life with for the most part for 10 months out of the year, 9 months out of the year, and there are these bonds that are forged and experiences that you have together that are much greater than what happens on the field. So during our interview, and if you go to, you'll see the video, I don't know if I've posted it yet on my YouTube channel, I will, but I'm talking to Benjamin, and Be the Light is like a little framed saying he's got hanging behind him. And I'm thinking of that, how, you know, shine your light on everyone.
Yeah.
Matthew 5:16. And I'm thinking about this story and how, to him, the proudest thing of his entire career is getting to baptize a couple teammates.
Wow.
And one, how humble is that? But two, how awesome is it to be able to help someone else, right, reach that point of salvation? And baptism isn't the point of, right, you accept the Lord, you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior, and then if you want to go through the water baptism at some point, it doesn't, you know, you're not saved because you're water baptized, but it's just an outward, and we've talked about it so many various times on the show, it's just an outward symbol of where you are, and you just want to profess for everyone publicly. So I'm just thinking
such
about
like a
that.
It's such a renewal. It's such like a beautiful moment. And honestly, yeah, I mean, that's such an honor, you know, to help someone take that first step. And there's something, I don't know why, but every time I watch baptism, I cry. And it's not like bad tears or really happy tears, because it's such a moving moment where, you know, once this person pop out of the water, there's something that's going to just click in their life where things are going to be cool. Like, I don't know. Like, you just, like, you know that, like, life is going to be, like, different now.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have to walk with Christ and really renew your mind and renew your faith and all that and really believe God is going to take you on this journey. But is there something about just popping out of that water, you feel like that's a fresh start right there? You know, that's your fresh start. That's your next. That's
your
it.
Your sin has, like, been washed away.
Yeah, it's so incredible.
It's so symbolic.
Right? It really is. You're washed clean by the blood of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And when you're coming out of the water, you're rinsed, you're washed, and you come out clean and just fresh and different. And you have this, like, I don't know, there's something about it that's so incredible. So, yeah, I would definitely relate to that. And I would definitely think it's the greatest moment.
I remember when you and I got the water baptism.
Right.
It was in 2016. It was 2016.
About that, yeah.
Because I had been baptized and it was 2016, and I was like, oh, I didn't even think to do it because I accepted Christ in 2010 and I just didn't think to do it. And then you wanted to do it, and then and then we did it. And it, that feeling of, you know, how you're standing in the pool and you get your head, you dip back, and like you said, and all your sin is washed away, and you get to start fresh and start new. And for him to be part of that for someone, be part of their journey, be part of their starting anew in the Lord, and for that to be the proud moment, it's incredible. And I just thought it was really cool. And I think about how we can be that light, be that person for someone else, and how often we can do that. Another thing that Benjamin and I spoke about is he's written these powerful essays, and he's talked about social justice issues, and he's talked about so many different things. And there was a line that really resonated with so many people, and he was talking about racism not being a skin problem, but a sin problem.
Mm.
And then relating that, it's
wow.
When we have any kind of hatred for someone else, or we have any kind of feeling of superiority, or we have any kind of, like, superiority is pride, right? If you feel better than someone, that's the sin of pride. Mm. If you have hate in your heart for anyone, I mean, that's a sin. And he's right. He looks at it from a spiritual perspective. And I think that when you talk about anything happening in the world right now, all the time, there's so much sin. And separating it is really difficult. And sometimes we just try and compartmentalize this sin, that sin, that sin, that sin. But in God's eyes, we're all sinners.
Yeah, we're all sinners. We're all the same. There's nothing different about our sin to him. But to ourselves, we think our sin is cool. So we're like, my sin is cooler than your sin, or this sin isn't as bad, right? Yeah, I mean, I guess if you think about it from like a humanly perspective, yeah, I mean, killing someone is pretty awful. You know, that's just the worst of the worst. Compare like a lie. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, from a human perspective, sure. From godly perspective, it's all the same. Like everything is leveled at, you know. For him, everything is the same. But for us, it is kind of...
Right, because there's no bringing that life back.
Right, it's pretty awful.
Obviously, yeah. The consequences are different for sin, right?
Yeah.
The consequences for committing murder are different than for the consequences for stealing a car or committing fraud or whatever. There's different consequences legally in the law for the sin that we commit.
Mm-hmm.
But all sin, all of it, whatever kind it is, it separates us from God.
Right.
Sin separates us from God. And the more we sin, the further and further apart we grow from God. So whatever sin that we commit, whether it's we're guilty of this, that, or the other, we have to realize we're separating ourselves further from God. And the enemy is putting himself in between us and our relationship with the Lord. And ultimately, he's the one who's happy. The enemy is the one who's smiling when we sin. Benjamin brings up this verse that is really, it's an awesome, Micah 6:8. The Lord has told you what is good, and this is what he requires of you, to do what is right, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God.
Yeah.
To do what is right, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. This is what he requires of you. This is in that verse. And as I read that verse and I think about it, to do what is right, I think we all know right from wrong. I guess can't say all the time. It can get vague maybe at a certain point. But we know most often, what is the right thing to do? Sometimes it gets a little complicated in certain situations, right? But we know what is the right thing to do. God wants us to do what is right and to love mercy. Man, that one's tough.
Yeah.
Because we want mercy. But do we want to show it?
Yeah, mercy's a difficult one. But you know what, though? Going back to the part where you said, like, sin separates you from God. It's true. And the thing is, when you're separated from God and the further you are from him, the more you get desensitized to sin. Like
that's really good.
The more you're falling off, the more you're like, Who cares if I lie again? Oh, who cares if I cheat again? Who cares if I kill again? Who cares if I do drugs again? Who cares what? You become so desensitized to sin and to the level of sin you're doing. And the farther away from God, the more you realize, it's cool. I'm just going to keep sinning. Because to you, it's not sin anymore. To you, it's like normal life now. To you, you became this person that's like okay with everything because that is your lifestyle now. And you separated yourself from God, from the one source of life that you need the most. And the problem with sin, the sinful life, is that you need to continue to sin to live that life. It's the weirdest thing ever. It's going to keep you, you're going to keep spiraling because it's the only way that's keeping you alive.
Yeah.
Till it kills you, because it will.
Yeah.
It was just such a weird thing, but it's true.
No, it and it's...
Because God is only God is life.
You get caught up in that cycle of sin. You get caught up in that cycle.
Right.
Gosh, I can go back to how I was in a cycle of unfaithful relationships, and I would go from one to another, and that was who I was, and that sin that I was, that lifestyle kept repeating itself, and that sin kept separating me further and further from God, and I kept reaching that point where that's who I was and that's what I became, and that I was keeping up with an image. I was keeping up with a persona. I was hanging out with a crowd and certain friends who were enabling me in some ways by always wanting to be around me and hanging out and going out and partying and that lifestyle. And I knew at times what I was doing wasn't right, but I kept myself in that cycle. And that sin kept separating me and separating me further and further from God. And I didn't have that relationship with the Lord. I didn't know what it meant to have a relationship with the Lord. I just was a religious person, but I didn't understand it. And that's why that sin just keeps separating you. And we all have different things that we do, different sin that we commit, or different problems that we have that separates us from God. I want to get back into the part of Micah 6:8. Where it says to love mercy, because mercy, the definition of mercy is compassion, forgiveness shown towards someone within one's power to punish or harm. And, you know, we all want people to forgive us. We all want people to be compassionate towards us. But how much do we reciprocate that? How much do we show mercy to others? Mercy is awesome when you're receiving it. But mercy, when we're showing it to others, is a little bit harder. And that's something that I try and think about in my life and try harder to do and try to be better at, because I want to be a merciful person. And God shows us, obviously, so much mercy, so much mercy. So Micah 6:8, the Lord has told you what is good. God has told us. We know what is good. We know what he requires of us. And he wants us to do what is right, to love mercy, and then to walk humbly with God, to walk humbly with him. And as I'm having this conversation with Benjamin, he's such a humble person. He's such a humble player, a former athlete, and everything that he does in his life, there's so much humility in it. And I can go back to when he caught one touchdown pass, when I just mentioned that they had twins after him and his wife had twins after five kids, and they were 6 and 7, and I believe he caught, it must have been in New Orleans, I think it was, and caught a touchdown pass, and this was before they changed the celebrating rules, and you could do whatever you want, and he used the ball as a prop, which was a 15-yard flag, but he put the ball underneath his uniform jersey and put two hands up to signify that his wife was pregnant with twins, and I thought it was really cool, but it was, in a way, it was humble. It wasn't a look-at-me moment. It wasn't something where he was saying, hey, look, it was kind of showing... he was doing it for his wife, and he was showing her some love, and he was showing her some appreciation by, hey, I scored a touchdown and here it is. And he's always shown how to walk humbly with God. And so that's a verse that I'm really trying to reflect on. And it was pretty cool that he brought it up, Micah 6:8, because man, do what is right, to love mercy, to walk humbly with God. Wow. It's not as easy as it seems. Sometimes when we know what the right thing to do is, but we just don't do it. We know what is good, but we just don't do it. And it's sin is tempting. Sin is often so tempting, so tempting. I said earlier this week at some point, I don't know what I was going through, I was having this conversation where it's so much easier to sometimes not be successful. It's easier to not be successful. It's easier to just live and not continue to strive to want to do more. Or I saw somebody post, and I totally agree with this the other day, was like, it's so hard to be fit and healthy because there's so much food that you want to, you know, I want to eat that burger. I want to eat that pizza. I want to have that ice cream, but you don't, right? And sometimes like sin is tempting, or stuff that's not good for us is tempting. So tempting at times, so incredibly tempting. But we know we want to resist. We know we should resist it. We know we don't have, we got to do our best to resist it. So just kind of want everybody to maybe think about that verse as I'm reflecting on it. I know Remy's reflecting on it, and we're trying to reflect on this. Is the Lord has told you what is good, and this is what he requires of you: to do what is right, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. In this day and age, in this society that we live in, where people are always posting about their accomplishments and this and that, it's not wrong. It's not a problem. You're proud of what you did. And I get that. I understand that. We're posting about the show. We're posting, hey, we're growing, we're expanding, we're doing this, we're doing that. And sometimes we get caught up in, hey, look at me, look what I did, look what I've been able to do. It's not what I've been able to do because I'm good enough. It's because I've been blessed, I've been privileged, I've been given that honor. God didn't have to give me that talent or skill, but he did, and I'm thankful and I'm grateful. He didn't have to give you that specific talent or skill, but he did. Be thankful, be grateful. Walk humbly with your God. It's a challenge. It's a big time challenge, and Benjamin is a really excellent example of that. So stay tuned. Benjamin Watson's coming up. You're listening to Faith on a Field Show with Rob and Remy Motti.
Karen University is a biblical university located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. With NCAA Division III athletics, a strong commitment to the arts, and majors in over 40 professional and academic fields, Karen prepares students to serve Christ as biblically minded, well-educated, and professionally competent men and women of character. Learn more at Karen.edu.
This is Trevor Story, Colorado Rockies. You're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome back to Faith on a Field Show. I'm Rob Motti with Remy. If you are tuning in for the first time on the radio dial, you can go to faithonafieldshow.com and find every show since we launched in 2017. We've had an awesome lineup of guests, and you can listen anytime at your convenience. We're also on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Podbean, as well as iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Faith on the Field. Sign up for our weekly email list and get our weekly episode delivered right to your inbox. Make sure you also follow us on all of our social media platforms. I'm at Rob Motti on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, at Real Rob Motti on Instagram, and Remy is simple, at Remy Motti on all of her social media. We'll let you know about speaking appearances and other events that we're hosting. Stay tuned. We have a huge announcement coming up, hopefully this week. You can also go to my YouTube channel, Rob Motti, and you can listen to some of my interviews, the longer form. You can hear all of those and see some of those videos. Benjamin Watson had over 500 career catches for more than 6,000 yards. He won a Super Bowl as a rookie with New England and had a long, successful career that lasted 16 seasons in the NFL. But off the field, Benjamin is even more respected as one of the most prominent social justice activists in sports. He has used his platform to speak on various important topics. Benjamin is one of those guys you just want to listen to because he always provides excellent perspective. Here is my conversation with Benjamin Watson. Benjamin Watson had over 500 career catches for more than 6,000 yards. He won a Super Bowl as a rookie with New England and had a long, successful career that lasted 16 seasons in the NFL. But off the field,
Benjamin is even more respected as one of the most prominent social justice activists in sports. He has used his platform to speak on various important topics. Benjamin is one of those guys you just want to listen to because he always provides excellent perspective. Here is my conversation with Benjamin Watson.
Benjamin, after 16 seasons in the NFL, 2020 was your first year in retirement, and I know that you're a guy who's involved in so many different projects. You and your wife have 7 children, so I'm sure you kept busy. What was the transition like for you, however, your first year out of the NFL?
It was crazy because my last game was in January of 2020, and who would have guessed everything that would have happened throughout that year? Kids out of school, people out of work, sickness and death happening. Oh, and by the way, we had a huge election that happened last year as well. I mean, there was so much going on. So it was a good time to be at home, I would say, just from a family standpoint of being with the kids, being with my wife, you know, helping, supporting. We kind of, you know, like so many other people did, kind of closed down business and just stayed at home. I mean, we were at home for so long. At one point, like, our car batteries died when we tried to go somewhere. We couldn't even drive anywhere because they'd literally been sitting there for weeks and weeks because we hadn't left, doing everything on Zoom. But it was also, though, a time of, I would say, it was emotionally trying at times. You know, I think a lot of people, ourselves included, struggled with what we were seeing on TV. You know, even now as we listen, you know, to the closing arguments and await a verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial, we saw mass protest. We saw the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, and all of that combined with the pandemic for all of us, you know, it was a tough year.
Do you think you would have missed football more had it not been such a chaotic type year and all of it was new to everybody, everything that we were going through?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you ask that because it did feel like a long off season. Like, it really didn't hit me that there was no football and that I was actually not going to camp because there was so much going on outside of our sphere and outside of the house and just in the world in general. And football looked differently. I mean, you know, we successfully negotiated a new CBA, and then we had to deal with the off-season program. What was that going to look like with the NFLPA and the NFL? And then we had to do COVID protocols. So being involved with those calls, and you know, I didn't even have to go through the protocols, but you know, I was helping to kind of hear what guys were saying and how those things were going. And so there was just so much to navigate last year that it actually probably made the transition a little smoother than it was. But I will say, when I turned the TV on Sundays, I still missed the game. My dad and I had an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl this year, and we went in person and watched. And it's probably only my third or fourth NFL game that I've ever watched from the stands. Wow. But the reason why we went was because of the pandemic. We knew it wouldn't be too crowded. And so we went down to Tampa. Great to see Tom win another one. We just enjoyed that.
Speaking of Tom winning another one, you played several years with him. You played several years with Drew Brees in New Orleans. What are the similarities between those two guys?
Excellence, you know, excellence. And not just excellence on the field. I mean, excellence off of it. But you know, whenever I answer that question and talk about that question, I like to talk about the fact that they are very, very accessible. I think that you know, when I first got to New Orleans and – you know, I'm coming from Cleveland, and I played with Tom Brady, obviously, who is a superstar, you know, larger than life figure. And I didn't know much about Drew, and I invited him to a charity event. And I'm like, this guy isn't going to show up to my charity event. I mean, it's Drew Brees, for God's sake. We're doing an event at a Walmart in the middle of New Orleans. He's not coming. Walks in with his family, his wife and his kids, and serves people. Takes pictures with people. I'm like, man, you cannot get hurt on my watch. I'm trying to shoo people away from him. He's like, no, keep bringing them, keep coming. Tom Brady, the same way. Guys walk up to this dude who are half his age and, you know, wants them to sign something for their dad or for themselves, or, you know, just very, very accessible, good-natured, kind individuals. Even though they are larger-than-life football stars, their husbands, their fathers, and they care about their family.
You hit on a great point there that I talk to other players about different quarterbacks around the league, and they may want to try and emulate what Tom does in his work habits or what Drew does in his work habits. But the fact that they're accessible, or Drew would show up to your charity event, Just how important is that as far as building leadership, cohesion, and chemistry, and being that guy, being that leader of a team who, even though you may be larger than life, you are right there with your teammates?
The best leaders are those that that people know that they really care about who they are and not just what they can give them. That's in any form of business or any sphere or sector of our society. When it comes to even in your own family, it's important that your kids know that you actually care about them, not how they perform for you at any given time. And so they both understand that. And it's imperative. I mean, that's why you see guys speak so highly of both of them when they leave and they go somewhere else and they may not be around a guy that's like that. And it's also why they've been so successful, because you want to play for a guy that not only is excellent and you know he puts in the preparation. All the football stuff is pretty obvious. X's and O's, we get that. But do you care about, you know, my sister that was sick? Can I talk to you about, you know, what I'm going through? Are you an encourager? And that's what sets them apart.
For all the things that you've accomplished on the football field, you won a Super Bowl your rookie season. I know you were a Walter Payton Man of the Year Award nominee, which is very important to a lot of guys, over 500 career catches. Do you look back, Benjamin, and say there's one thing that I'm most proud of?
You know, I would say the thing I'm most proud of, really two things. In 2015 in New Orleans, I was a team captain. And that was it was the only year I was a team captain in my career and in the NFL. And that was a special, special time being elected by my peers to do that, to lead the team. Also that year, I had the opportunity with a guy named Luke McCown, who was a quarterback for, it was in my draft class. He played for, I think, 14 years. We actually baptized a couple of our teammates in the rehab pool in New Orleans. Two guys wanted to be baptized on January 1st. We go in there in the rehab pool, talk to the trainers. They say, yeah, you can go do it. We go in there. The team gathered around. We sang some hymns. We baptized the guys in the rehab pool. And that memory will never leave me, because we always talk about football being family. It is family, but it's also spiritual family. These are the guys that you do life with for the most part for, you know, 10 months out of the year, 9 months out of the year. And there are bonds that are forged and experiences that you have together that are much greater than what happens on the field.
Man, I love that. You know, I'm a guy who's appreciative of that kind of memory. So that's pretty awesome. Benjamin, you've been outspoken about social justice issues. You've become one of the most respected voices in America. And your best-selling book, Under Our Skin, is relaunching. Can you tell me about the inspiration for writing this book initially and the timing now of the relaunch?
Yeah, Under Our Skin was initially written back in 2015 after Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. And we can remember it was almost like a year like last year, but a little bit different because we weren't all at home because of a pandemic. But there was great social, you know, we want to call it social unrest or social awakening or, you know, but you had Eric Garner in New York, you had Tamir Rice. And then we had this incident in Ferguson, Missouri, where a police officer had killed a young black man. And we didn't know the circumstances. There was no video, barely any witnesses. But it was part of a summer, at the end of a summer, with so much turmoil that was happening. And I had so many of the emotions that many of us have faced last year, about being angry, but about being fearful and hopeless and hopeful and introspective and sympathetic. All these plethora of emotions that we all go through when we see these things happen, I was experiencing that. And so I wrote about it, just unpacking my experience. But the larger reason why I wrote about it was the fact that it is imperative that we are able to see the nuance in so many different issues. So much of what we go through is not simply in black and white. Take, for instance, that example. We didn't really know all of the facts, but we knew the history and the context of what had been happening and what has happened in this country. And we knew how it made us feel. So when you fast forward to 2020, many people had reached out and said they read the book. They've done small groups about the book, just trying to open up dialogue and conversation about the issue of not just policing, but just the issue of ethnicity, race in this country, because no matter how much we want to say we have moved past it, we clearly have not. No matter how much we don't talk about it, it still sizzles under the surface. No matter how much we deny it, its existence, it's something that we face and that we must deal with and we must confront. But what I wanted to write was a tool for individuals, organizations, groups to use to open up the lines of communication for people of all backgrounds, and not just ethnic backgrounds, but political backgrounds, economic backgrounds, to enter into this most important conversation.
Well, you wrote so many powerful essays, several powerful essays. And the one, Michael Brown and Ferguson, there's a line in there that, Benjamin, really resonated. And you said it's not a skin problem, it's a sin problem. Can you expand on that? Because I think it is so important. And I want all the listeners to hear your explanation for that.
Yeah, it's important to understand that the issue of racism is really an issue of favoritism, partiality, bias, and that's sin. And sin is simply a small word that talks about going against God's standard. And so what we see in scripture is that we were all created in his image, that we all have value no matter where we've come from, that it's important that we love each other, that we take care of each other. And what mankind does is oppress each other. That's what we've always done. And so when you talk about the issue of racism, we have to understand that there's a spiritual component there. Just like when we talk about theft, or we talk about murder, or we talk about even worry, we talk about all these things. There's a spiritual component there that is antithetical to God's best for our life. So we have to address the spiritual whenever we talk about issues that have spiritual components. So that's what racism is. And so when I say racism is a sin problem, what I'm saying is that we got to address the heart. It's the heart of mankind that hates one another. It's the heart of mankind that thinks that I am better than someone else, or that this person is less human, or I want to oppress them to make myself feel better, or to make my life easier, or to make my group better than that other group. But we look at it as skin. And so as I go in the book, I even talk about technically the fact that we are all one race. We know that. Well, I say we know that, but many of us don't act like it. We are but one race. We are but one blood. The DNA that runs through you and the DNA that runs through me is so similar. You know, even though we may look differently, we are but one race. And so the issue that we have to get to is the heart. But within that, it's also important that we address institutions. It's also important that we address policy. As we look back at our history and we look at the history of Jim Crow, or we look at black codes, or we look at chattel slavery, or we look at mass incarceration, or we look at redlining, or the racial wealth gap, it's important that we address those things, because that's the manifestation of the sin in our present context. So we have to do both. We have to address individuals, which is the sin problem. We do have to address the institutions, because the sin has been based on the skin. And that's how we got to where we are.
I sat down with you 4 years ago when you were with the Ravens in Baltimore, and we talked about,
I remember.
Yeah, the role of the church in unifying people of all races and colors. Benjamin, how do you engage? Because I see you doing this very well on social media and in conversations. How do you engage with and even try to educate fellow Christians who don't understand the fight for social justice?
Well, I have to find common ground. And common ground sometimes gets a bad rap because it seems like you're capitulating or you are compromising some sort of truth. But what I mean by common ground is there should biblically be a common ground for believers on justice. Social justice is simply the manifestation of justice in social settings. But the term social justice has become a stumbling block for large sects of Christianity. They rail against it. They think it's tied to liberal policy or this or that or the other. But all believers should be able to look at Jeremiah chapter 9, 23 and 24, or be able to look at Micah 6, 8, or be able to look at verses in Isaiah that talk about God being a God of justice and identify what that is as believers. And so then the question is, once we found that common ground, that God is a God of justice. And we know that because in scripture, as believers, we understand Christ died for our sins. That was an act of justice. We had to be made right with God. So the justice of God had to be fulfilled. So we know God cares about justice. And then we work outward from that. The church is also, you know, I believe it was Martin Luther King, but he wasn't the only one that said this, that the church is highly segregated. Now, segregation in and of itself, meaning people being separate, is not inherently an issue. If I live in a very homogeneous place or homogeneous state, I'm not expecting to see people of all ethnic backgrounds that don't even live anywhere within 100 miles of me. So that's not the issue. But there needs to be unity of purpose. Galatians 3:28 talks about the dividing lines that we have as individuals, Jew or Greek, slave or free, male or female, are cast aside because we are one in him. We have unity and purpose in him. And so when I talk to the church, I say, look, we have to get this right. And the other reason why we got to get this right is because we are ruining our witness. If believers in the church, if their job is to show other people what it means to be kind and to be gracious and to be loving and to be gentle and to be filled with the Spirit and all these sorts of fruits, and we're the last ones, we're the worst ones when it comes to issues of race. Like, we can't talk about it. We get offended. We call names. We do all that stuff. We shun other people because of their experiences. What good are we to the people that we are supposedly trying to show the love of Christ to?
Well said. What is your hope that people take away out of reading your book, Under Our Skin?
I want people, when they read Under Our Skin, to see themselves in the pages. And that is a number one response that I've gotten from people reading the book is, you know, I saw some of me in what you said. Because when it comes to the issue of a race, it's not either or, it's both and. There's multiple different emotions that we go through. None of these issues, the issue, what Satan wants to do, he wants to paint issues like Michael Brown and Officer Wilson, or paint issues like, you know, even in George Floyd and Derek Chauvin. He wants to paint some of these issues in such stark black and white terms that create tribalism that don't allow us to connect. And we should be able to call wrong wrong and right right and have no ties to whatever side we're supposed to be on. My hope when people read is that they're convicted, that they're challenged to see things that maybe they hadn't seen before. We all have blind spots. Sometimes we need a mirror and a rearview mirror so we can see what those blind spots are. That's what I try to expose in Under Our Skin by talking about some of my personal experiences, but more importantly, talking about how Americans in general, people of all faith backgrounds, of all economic stripes, people of all ethnicity, can courageously have these conversations and courageously make change in their local communities.
Benjamin, how do you feel about the way the NFL has handled the social justice issues and why it took a few years for them to embrace it after Colin Kaepernick started the fight? And last year, we know that Commissioner Goodell apologized and said, "We wish we would have heard you sooner." How do you feel that the NFL has handled it from the start and the improvements that they have made?
I think good can be done no matter when you enter into the race. I do believe, however, that the NFL, like any other business, is their main job is revenue. And their main job is to, you know, make a fan experiences and make fans feel comfortable. And so when it comes to these types of issues, they are going to be late to the party sometimes. But that does not mean that the things that they are doing now with the awareness campaigns, with funding for specific initiatives, it doesn't mean that those things are for naught. Those things can be greatly effective and are being greatly effective. But the frustration came because it took so long. I can remember an incident happened with the NFL with a player and domestic violence. And all of a sudden, the NFL started putting out PSAs about you know, men's violence against women and protecting women and those sorts of things. And I remember telling my wife, you know, why are they talking about this now? They're only talking about it because they're getting bashed in the media. That's the only reason why they're talking about protecting women now. But when they weren't talking about this before, my wife said to me, well, that may be true, but there might be a man who is sitting there watching one of these PSAs during a game. And instead of hitting his wife or saying something derogatory to his wife, he thinks twice because what he just saw and it challenged him. And so good can come from being late, but we all wish that there was more initiative in the very beginning. And not the very beginning, because look, these things have been happening since the first player was drafted. And like, this is a long continuum of a fight that has been waged inside the NFL, but also outside of the NFL in culture by different players. This is not something that just started, but it is good to see many in the front offices and the different clubs and the owners being educated and being more aware and more active when it comes to creating the justice that we talk about.
Your wife made a smart point talking to you about that. And I know that you guys together, you and Kirsten, are doing a podcast, Why or Why Not with the Watsons. Tell me a little bit about that. What was your reasoning behind starting that, and what it's like, you know, what kind of lessons, what kind of conversations do you guys share on there?
Well, that was a product of COVID. We were sitting around, stuck in the house, and we said, you know what, let's start recording a podcast. And so Why or Why Not with the Watsons is available on Spotify, Apple, all the podcast platforms. But basically, you know, I'm why, because I'm the more analytical person, finance guy. I like to be she's the marketing. Why not enjoy, try something new, you know, get out of the same old. So we kind of balance each other out, but our podcast is really about you know, parenting, raising our seven kids, parenting tips. It's about marriage. We are not marriage experts by any stretch of the imagination, but we've been through a little bit in our 15 years of marriage and moving around and all those sorts of things. So we talk about marriage, about parenting, about dealing with current events. You know, how do I talk to my kids about what's happening right now with the Chauvin trial? And looking back last year and when you saw people protesting in the streets, how do I talk to my kids about that? How do I talk to my kids about bullying? How do I, as believers, you know, we talked about, you know, the church. What is the church's role to teach our kids, and what is our role as parents? So our hope is to empower parents, but also just to empower people, specifically as we live our lives with our families and encourage families to thrive. So Why or Why Not with the Watsons? We just recorded, I think, our 30th episode. So we're still fairly new and trying to figure this thing out, but we are having fun with it.
Well, as you and I are having this conversation, I see right behind you, Be the Light is in a little frame. And it just reminds me, obviously, of Matthew 5:16 and shine your light on others so they can see. And that, I know that is something that you guys are living out, and I appreciate that about you. One more thing I wanted to ask you about, Benjamin. I don't know if this has you've ever had these conversations, but I was talking to an NFL executive, and he was talking to me about the combine and the way players have been treated at the combine over the years, and just the way they're poked, they're prodded, they're standing there half naked, they're asked questions like Des Bryant was once asked a question, is your mother a prostitute, and about the drugs. And he said to me, it's almost like a slave owner mentality. Have you ever had conversations with other players or anyone else about the combine?
I've had several conversations about the combine specifically, but also just about the entire setup. When you go to camp and the owner is watching you and he's sipping tea, watching you on the field. Now, the combine, I do remember feeling, you know, not violated, but feeling like something is just not right about this. I'm standing there with my shorts on, no shirt on. People are looking at you. And it is reminiscent of the stories that we've heard about an auction block. You cannot distance or decouple the two once you know the history of what's happened in this country as far as purchasing chattel and seeing their teeth and seeing their muscle type and their body type and all those sorts of things. So there is somewhat of a feeling that now it is nowhere near the same thing as slavery. I would never go that far and say that. But you do have that feeling of feeling devalued as a person because it is solely about your looks and what you can do on the field. I can remember sitting in an interview when with the team, and the interviewer, you go into a room, it's a dark room, there's a huge spotlight, and there's a seat there like you're being interrogated for a crime. And you walk in there and they have an interrogator, and all the front office staff is in the back in the shadows and you can't see them. And the guy grabbed my wrist and he's like, I can feel your pulse, so I know if you're lying to me. Have you ever smoked marijuana? I said, no, and I really hadn't. Like, I've never smoked that. And everybody has their vices. I just never smoked marijuana. I said, no, I haven't. I think you're lying. I can feel your pulse. Are you lying to me? I said, no, I'm not. So for a minute, I thought I actually did smoke marijuana. I was like, maybe I need to confess to a crime that I didn't commit. But these sorts of tactics that are happening at the combine and that are not being monitored definitely need to be done away with. And so to answer your question, I have had conversations with guys about the combine, but also just in general about the NFL and pro sports. Look, we've had owners make comments about, you know, inmates running the asylum and, you know, just those sorts of devaluing comments that are made by ownership only adds to these conversations.
Benjamin, man, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it as always. It's a pleasure to hear and just hear your wisdom, man. Thank you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
That was Benjamin Watson. This is Faith on the Field Show with Rob and Remy Mahdi.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Karen University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Karen is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Karen is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at karen.edu/visit.
Hey, this is Curtis Granis. You're listening to Faith on the Field.
Welcome back to Faith on the Field Show. I'm Rob Mahdi with Remy. I want to take a minute to thank all of our wonderful, amazing sponsors. Please check them out on our website, faithonthefieldshow.com. Karen University, Heritage's Dairy Stores, Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates. Awesome people. Check them out. If you would like to be a sponsor for our show, please reach out to us at team@faithonthefieldshow.com. We have various packages we can cater to fit your specific needs on radio, social media, our podcast. There's so much that we can do. If you partner up with Faith on the Field, you would help us grow the ministry. Our goal is to be on a sports radio station in every state. We're hoping real soon, maybe even this week, we'll have a major announcement about expansion. If you don't have a business to advertise on, but you just want to help our ministry grow, we do have a donate button on our page on faithonthefieldshow.com. And you can also help the ministry by purchasing some of our new merchandise through Remy's 828 Threads Apparel Store. We have t-shirts, long-sleeve shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, everything. The most popular one still is My Story, His Glory. We have that in a t-shirt and all kinds of different things. One of our most recent designs was a football helmet with the phrase, "I wear the helmet of salvation," which comes from Ephesians 6:17. There's a lot of cool stuff. Maybe we'll come up with something baseball-oriented real soon, too. You can check it out on our site, faithonthefieldshow.com, under merch, and it's also all over our social media. I want to thank Benjamin Watson for being our guest this week. Big thanks to Doug Horton and Pastor Scott Foreman for all their hard work for Faith on the Field. And thank you to all of our listeners and everyone who makes this happen. For Remy, I'm Rob Mahdi, reminding you, make a difference, be a blessing.